facility, Medic 1. Medic 1 inbound to your facility, emergency traffic on a 45-year-old male in cardiac arrest. Following multiple gunshot wounds, CPR in progress, patient in base, IO in place. Stay with you in 5 minutes.
Welcome to the EMS Handoff, your source for all things EMS. And now, let's welcome to the show your hosts, Bradley Dean, Eric McCullough, and David Blevins.
Hello, and welcome to the EMS Handoff Podcast. This is David, and along with my co-hosts, Bradley Dean and Eric McCullough, we are your source for all things EMS. Tonight, we welcome a group of distinguished guests this week. And just like every other week, we'll see if they're distinguished or not by the time we get done with this. But we've got a great topic tonight and very timely when it comes to things that are looking on the advocacy side for EMS. So we're going to jump into that here in just a minute. But let's go ahead and head over to the east side of our hosting territory. Bradley Dean. Not at home anymore, but still making time for the handoff. What's up?
Yeah, I'm actually home tonight. I just got home. So had to get home, get unloaded, and get plugged in before we got started here.
Sliding in sideways, lights and sirens, ready to go for another topic. After some search and rescue, is that right?
Yeah, after spending about 7 days in the woods with a group of rescue people trying to run through some stuff in a search exercise. It was wonderful. Great group of guys and ladies.
Good weather too, huh?
Oh man, it poured rain Wednesday afternoon, Thursday, Friday morning. It was horrible, but it was good.
Hey, that's the way it is in our field. You never know. So let's go to the west side. Our social media manager, web developer, all things technology-based, chief information officer, Eric McCullough.
I didn't have to. Well, hey, Bradley, just remember our motto in the Army. If it ain't raining, we ain't training. I didn't have to worry about that. I didn't have to worry about that, though. It was sunshiny. We were outside. This is the first day of spring. Kids were outside all day rolling around and fresh cut grass. I have no complaints about my weekend.
So that is something we have to do. The fresh cut grass is going to have to come soon. It's one of those things that nothing at all happens, and all of a sudden it's like 5 inches of overgrown hay going on in the front yard. So, all right. Before we introduce our guests this evening, we'd like to thank our podcast host, the Journal of Emergency Medical Services. They've been a tremendous partner with the EMS Handoff Podcast. And while the EMS Handoff serves as your source for all things EMS and the podcast verse, Jim's has been an industry leader in the profession for many years. Go by their website and support their efforts to keep the industry informed. And also check out our fellow Jim's podcast hosts. Jim's has also expanded their podcast platform recently. So if you haven't already, make sure to check us out on Spotify as well. Lastly, we'd like to remind you all to check out our EMS Handoff gear. As you see each of us in today, I've got the red, Bradley sporting the gray, and Eric has got the black with the blacked out logo on the front. Something awesome. But we've partnered with Pursuit Outfitters to offer this line of comfortable and stylish EMS Handoff gear with t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, and my most favorite. Although I did wait until the first day or the week before spring to get the hoodie, but it's still great. So make sure and get your gear, show it in our social media. You can find us at pursuitoutfitters.com/EMS handoff. Today, we're kicking it over to Eric. Eric's going to give our introduction for the group that we have today. Let's hear it.
Yeah, this is our first episode where we have a prestigious group of people from the NAEMT. It's from the board of directors, who's going to tell us a little bit about advocacy, which is going to be awesome. So from the board of directors, the first one is Susan Bailey. She is the president-elect. She's also the director of the Louisiana Bureau of Emergency Medical Service, has been active in the industry since 1990. She's has both experience in the rural and urban settings. She's the chair of the Commission on Accreditation of Pre-Hospital Continuing Education, CAPSE. on that board of directors, serves as a curriculum and site reviewer. She is also a member of the National Association of State EMS Officials. And that's just the beginning. She can fill in gaps whenever we start in right after. We also have Chris Way. He is the treasurer. He has been in the emergency medical service profession for 28 years. He transitioned to, oh man, I'm going to mess this up. You just said it to Kootenai. Okay, there it is. Kootenai County Fire and Rescue as fire chief in May 2020 after serving as the chief officer for the Kootenai County EMS system for the previous seven years. Last one is Chief Troy Took. He is the secretary, and I hope I pronounced your, if I butcher your names, I apologize. He began his EMS career after obtaining his paramedic and RN credentials from Brigham University in Idaho in 1989. He worked full-time as an RN and medic, specializing in critical care, trauma, flight nurse, before joining the Clark County Fire Department as a firefighter paramedic in 96. He was promoted through the ranks of fire engineer, EMS coordinator, and assistant chief EMS until his retirement from CCFD October 4, 2019. He now works with Mountain View Hospital Paramedic Institute as the lead instructor. So I hope I did y'all's intro justice, and I'll let David kind of take it from there. And hopefully if you guys can fill in any gaps that I might have missed along the way.
All right, guys. So that's the end of the episode. We got everything done. Hey, hope everything was great.
That was easy.
Right. It's all done. Hey, how many of y'all have ever watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail? If we raise our hand, all right, great movie, right? So at the very beginning, when it's going through all the credits, we're just going to have to sack Eric right now. He can't pronounce community. You know, it's one of those things. Sorry, Eric, you're the first voted off the island tonight. So as you heard, we've kind of either set you up for success, guys, or failure. We've got distinguished, prestigious, and we'll see if any of the three of you are any of those, but let's go ahead and
prove you wrong.
Hey, that'll work too. We've had many have tried, most have failed. So, all right. Let me just start off with this question. Since we're talking with the advocacy group with the National Association of EMTs, let's just start off with the easy. I'm going to toss a softball. What is advocacy?
Well, advocacy to me is making sure that we are doing right by our industry and our profession, and making sure that we are conscious of how things affect our industry, and both the making sure we're advocating for new things and better things, but also watching out for the unintended consequences that legislation or action may have. And I think it's at the federal level and the state level both.
And it, the one thing that I would add there too, it's about education, right? It's about educating the members of the workforce about simple things that they can do to educate their local leaders and their state leaders all the way up to the federal level. And it's also about educating state and federal legislators on what is good for our industry and those things that they think may be good because they're not in the know. And that gives us an opportunity and a platform to let them know the real information so that we can get better help out to those that are on the front line.
And I'd like to think that, you know, the third leg is to talk to our coworkers and our fellow EMS professionals and get them to understand what EMS is about and how EMS spans from the local level, the state level, and the national level, and why it's important to communicate with all of our legal authorities and our legislators on why EMS is important.
So let's take that then, and I appreciate the way that you kind of laid that out. And let's start this way, following that, who should be involved in advocacy? Right now, we're talking to members of NAEMT and the advocacy committee, which is kind of a formal process. There's group, and that you all have a lot that we're going to discuss tonight that you all are going on. But who should be involved with advocacy in EMS?
Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, I think the short answer is everyone. Now, I will tell you that it's to different levels for different people, and that's okay, but nothing impacts a legislator more than hearing from somebody from their district, whether it's a local legislator, you know, at the state level, and it's one of your local senators or representatives, or whether it's your federal legislator. If you can tie something back to how a law or a rule or a movement that they see affects you at the local level, that is much more impactful to me, to them. And they've said that to us, that's much more impactful to them than getting a letter, a form letter from NAEMT or a form letter from your county council or your city commission, whatever it is. So I think that's, I think everyone has a responsibility to be active in advocacy.
I would add that the more voices that are in alignment, the stronger that message is to those that are elected to represent us. And that helps them to make the tougher decisions with a little bit more confidence, instead of relying on other people that are not in the business to tell them what's good. And so I started in NEMT as an advocacy coordinator in the state of Nevada. I didn't know anything about advocacy. And over the last 8 or 9 years, I've learned a lot and seen the importance of it and the great things that some of which we'll discuss tonight that have come along because we're getting more involved in advocacy and we've got more ears on the Hill that actually listen and want our input on certain things.
And everyone should be involved, but there's, as a person who also was Louisiana advocacy coordinator when I started with NAMT, but there's, to me, there's nothing more flattering to get the legislators' staff members to know your name. And so when you call them and it's like, oh, hey, Susan, how's it going? What, you know, what's going on with EMS today? Right. And so that's a true compliment. And everybody, you know, should be proud of the profession. And so they should be willing to advocate to, you know, make our profession better.
So, you know, as you kind of mentioned, I believe it's Troy, really all three of you have said at this point in time, it's kind of key to focus on the fact that, you know, we're not focused on one specific level. EMS has engagement at really all three levels, the local community level, the state level, and the federal level. And one of my favorite television shows kind of made this is like, you know, if most of our advocacy should be done at those local and state levels, how come it's only the president that seems to be the one that everybody knows? But Susan, you just mentioned it there. It's really knowing those local and state officials as well, and also really their staff members, because a lot of things, you know, the representative or the senator at those levels, or even town council, you know, they're dealing with a lot of these people. But if you can get stuff in front of their staff and get them on board with you, you can get a lot more things through that direction. Am I right?
Correct. Very correct. Usually it's very difficult to get a face-to-face meeting with the official themselves, but if you can get, especially on a first name basis with the staff at any level, you've truly done your job as an advocate for EMS.
I would add, so I think at the federal level, you deal a lot with the staff, and I don't want to speak for Louisiana or Nevada, but I will tell you at our state officials use us locally as the resource. And so I've been called from this floor of the Senate and the House in Idaho to say, Chris, I've got this bill in front of me. What are your thoughts? Or when they're home on the weekends during the legislative session, they're seeking us out to say, how is this going to affect you? If I vote yes on this, what kind of effect is that going to have? Or if I vote no on this, what type of effect is it going to have? And some of that is just done over time. That doesn't happen day one, but it's built through a long-term relationship with them, and it's working with them and figuring out that they can trust you. What you say is absolutely, you know, comes true and is factual, and you need to be able to trust them. And but building those relationships cannot be understated.
So let me actually take that just a little bit further, Chris, because that's really where I was getting ready to head next. If we are waiting to the point that we have something that we need from one of our levels, the town council, the state legislature, or the federal legislature, if we're waiting to the point that we need, so I'm coming to to Representative Way and say, hey, I need you to pass this bill. I need you to carry this bill for me. That's too late.
Right.
Right. It's one of those things that we have to meet those people, develop those relationships when we don't need anything. So that, as you said, they're willing to say, hey, I need some input. Hey, Chris, I need your help.
Yeah. To me, it's a year round thing. I mean, most state legislatures are only in session for a short period of time. Most don't have a year round legislature like the federal legislature is. And so, in Idaho, it's from basically January 5th or whatever the first full Monday in January is through the first full week in April. And they're in session during that. And that's when the bills are happening. But we're meeting with them from May until through December to get them ready. And, this is an election year. So, for instance, I have a new state senator this year, and it's been a lot. He's obviously getting pushed by people, the lobbyists, but he's, we don't have I can't have a lobbyist as a government agency. It's in Idaho. You can't necessarily hire a lobbyist, but your associations can hire lobbyists, and we can lobby ourselves. And so keeping that relationship, and again, having those cell phone numbers and being able to, sometimes I just text him and say, hey, Senator, just remember that Senate bill has this kind of an impact on us. And at least I feel like, and we don't always agree and they don't always vote, but we just this week had a big one that failed on the floor of the Senate. And I do think it's because all of us got engaged. It was a bill about cutting property tax, although it didn't really cut property tax. And so it negatively affected all of the government agencies, and we are all for limiting property tax, but the way they did it had a big effect on us. But I think the push that we made at the end of talking to all those 35 senators on a local level, we saw the result, because I would have told you a week before that it would have passed 25 to 10 and it ended up failing 17 to 18.
And let's kind of take, before I I'm getting ready to pivot to going to the NAEMT advocacy side, but also developing those relationships, so you're kind of talking from your perspective at kind of at that service level, but even as the individual, the more that those individuals here that are in the legislature or in those positions to pass policy that affects EMS, the more that they hear from the individual, the more they kind of get the idea. I've spoken to some in the past and kind of talked about what EMS does. And some of them don't know what actually happens in the back of the ambulance, what an EMS service actually does. These individuals are business leaders, or they may never have engaged with an ambulance service. So some of them have been basically you're picking up somebody and taking them to the hospital and don't know what an EMT or advanced EMT or paramedic can do. So that individual attention, say, hey, I'm a paramedic at the local level. This is what I do. And that creates that better understanding.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I mean, it's no different. You're absolutely right. Most state legislators are something else in their real life. And, whether they're a lawyer or a doctor or manage the co-op, it's whatever they do, but to get them. And I would tell you, we try very hard to, and it's been a little bit challenging with the pandemic, obviously, but we try to have our legislators in, once a year we fix them lunch at our stations, and we invite them in and invite our staff to talk to them so that they're not just talking to the chiefs and the leaders. They're talking to people at all levels about what it is like. Another example, we had a big push 3 years ago for PTSD legislation becoming a workers' comp issue. And we were the third state, I think, to do that. And it was a big deal to have people at the line level, not the chiefs who aren't running nearly as many calls as we used to, but have those line level people interacting with the legislators to talk to that. So, yeah, I think at all levels, it's incredibly important.
I think one of the other things to think about, too, is, a lot of people aren't comfortable talking to electeds and those kinds of things. They're not comfortable in that environment. So, on the NEMT website, we have the online legislative service, and we kind of, through the work of the staff and stuff, they have ways for somebody just to go online, hit a letter that they agree with, and it's an ask specifically for something we're doing, you know, across the country or in a certain area. It just depends. And it goes to their elected representative on a form letter, and they sign it. And so it's an easy way to get involved. Some people think that it's very difficult to do that, and it's not. It's as simple as going to the website, hitting the OLS, a group, finding something that you're passionate about and agree with, and sign it and send it to your representative. And the more of those happen, the more interest and more questions those that are comfortable talking with electeds get. So that's just another simple, easy way for the average person to get involved.
And part of our advocacy during EMS week is to invite our governmental officials at all three levels or their staff members to ride with us on the ambulance. And that has really opened many people's eyes. And they were like, we had no idea this is what you did. We just thought you picked people up, threw them in the ambulance, and took them to the hospital. We didn't know that you could start this treatment or that treatment en route to the hospital. So that opened a lot of eyes, especially, you know, the people who have rode with us on the ambulances.
Very, very good point. So let's go ahead and pivot now, talking specific about NAEMT advocacy. And I'm going to kick this over to Troy, because you're currently serving as the chair of the NAEMT Advocacy Committee. So tell us what the NAEMT Advocacy Committee is and kind of what the goals behind the committee are.
Well, the goals and what we've talked about so far is education, getting everybody involved, moving forward to educate both our coworkers and then those that are elected to represent us. We meet once a month as an advocacy committee. There's about 14 of us to talk about these issues. And then we're developing a grassroots network across the country. I think we only have four states right now that do not have an NAEMT advocacy coordinator. All of the other states do, and most of those states with advocacy coordinators have assistant coordinators. For example, in Nevada, we're kind of spread out. We have two big population centers, Las Vegas and Reno up top, and then a lot of rural and frontier volunteer services in between. And so it's difficult for one coordinator in that kind of a setup to meet all of the needs. So we get different. We have three other advocacy assistants in the state of Nevada that are from each of those regions, so that we can keep track of the issues that are important to everybody in the state. And then we bring those issues forward once a month, and we take those issues and discuss them, figure out what we want to do about that with staff. And then we take some of our recommendations. I'm sure we'll get into this in a minute, but some of the recommendations for EMS on the Hill today were vetted and recommended by the advocacy committee to the general board of NAEMT, so we can formulate our official positions for each EMS on the Hill day.
All right. And so we'll kick it off, and don't have to look, because you can actually go on the website. So if you're in the EMS handoff podcast verse and you're in an area that doesn't have an advocacy counselor, you already have some information here from some prior ones that have gone a little bit further, and they would certainly welcome you. Tennessee has a great one. I'm a good friend of Jeannie Dyden, and I'll put in here that we gave her a shout out, but she does a great job for the state of Tennessee as well. So let's talk about, Troy, you just mentioned this a couple minutes ago. So let's talk about that website for advocacy. So sure. As you mentioned, you know, that website itself is basically set up for a lot of these individuals that don't necessarily feel comfortable talking to those elected officials. So there's a lot of things that are going on, and the EMT kind of has their hands in each one of those, trying to make an impact on that the larger scale. And so they try to help, because we know not only that direct contact, but really that that multitude of inputs that they get. So if a legislator hears from one of their members, okay, they have it in the back of their mind. If they hear from 10, now it's coming to the forefront. If 100 from their district reach out, it's a big thing. So kind of let's go into that a little bit more. So the advocacy website is there. and provides a lot of resources. So if any of y'all want to jump into that, let's talk about that a little bit more for those individuals that aren't ready yet to make that phone call or send an individual email out.
Yeah, so if you go to NAMT.org, that brings up the main webpage, and on the left side, you'll see advocacy. If you hit on that tab, advocacy opens up to overview what we're trying to do. It talks about the online legislative service, which is what I was describing earlier in the podcast, where we have certain items that we want to get out to all of the representatives. And it's just a matter of clicking on that item. It tells you who your representative is, if it's a House or a Senate or both. And then you're able to send those letters with your signature on them to their office. I've done that several times over the last few years, and always within a week or two, I get a letter back from the office saying that they received it, that they were thankful for our input, and that they'll take it under advisement. And so the more, as you said, the more people that do that, the more that comes to the forefront because they have so many things on their mind. There's also a list of all the advocacy coordinators in your state. So each state advocacy coordinator is listed. There's positions that we've taken. There's several, too many to talk about tonight, on different issues that, affect us at the local, state, and federal level. It tells about the EMS caucus. Yeah, it gives us updates on EMS on the Hill Day, all those kinds of things. So anything you want to know about advocacy, our positions as a group of NAMT, you can find under that tab on the main website. And it's very simple, easy, and very clear. Our staff does a great, great job of keeping this updated. And it's a very good source of information for what's going on in your state and nationally, and what we're trying to do to help the states and all of us at the federal level.
Troy, just let me add that the online legislative service, while we encourage everyone to be members of NAEMT, you don't have to be a member to be able to access the OLS.
And not only that, but you can also take, you know, again, that that duplicity, you can have your family members get on there and again, send that. And that's, you know, that abundance, that something big all of a sudden catches attention. And so I want to tag on to, before we get into the specific things of EMS Day on the Hill this year and some of the things that are going on, I want to kind of explore just a little bit more. One of the things that Troy said, it's a big topic of mine. A lot of people in this profession have talked about what the fire service and law enforcement have come about. But Troy, you mentioned one of the things that's kind of been big on NAEMT's page for a little bit, and that's the Congressional EMS Caucus. Mm-hmm. We see the Congressional Fire Service Caucus, and if you take a look at the membership there, very vast. And these are members that are tied specifically to a mission of enhancing the fire service there. And it's one of those things that we should be advocating as many of our federal legislators to join as well. So if they haven't already, they can still go on that website and push there, because these individuals are those in the House and the Senate that are tied to making EMS a better field altogether.
Right. Yeah. The EMS caucus, their main job is to look at anything that that's related to EMS and make sure it gets pushed and make sure it gets heard, you know, on the House and on the Senate side. The caucus is on the House side, but it allows them to push that. And they're basically champions for our profession, right? They're the representatives and legislatures that are fully involved and supportive of EMS in whatever delivery model that you have. And they're our champions and the ones that make sure that things get heard up there.
Do you have something to add on that, Chris?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that you target natural people, and we found those successful people. But keep in mind, the House turns over a lot of people every 2 years. So we have a lot of freshman congressmen and congresswomen this, you know, that just got sworn in 2 months ago. And targeting them to join the EMS caucus is huge, because they're the people then that we go to to champion bills and look to sign on to bills. And if they've already joined the caucus, then they're getting that information pretty regularly. So it has been a good thing. I would tell you, people naturally to target for that are, we have a lot of physicians and medical professionals in Congress. So whether they're a physician, one of our representatives in Idaho is a dentist. And so while the dentist maybe doesn't understand EMS as a whole, they certainly understand healthcare and some of the issues we're facing. So targeting some of those people and trying to get people that have a natural connection to healthcare or public safety for whatever, however that looks for them, has been our most successful piece to tie in.
I would agree.
All right, Susan, I'm gonna toss the next question to you. As president-elect, one of the signature events of NAEMT every year is the EMS Day on the Hill. COVID has changed the way things are happening this year. It kind of wreaked havoc with last year as well, but kind of pressing forward, let's talk about what is EMS Day on the Hill.
So EMS on the Hill Day is when we go to the Capitol, to Capitol Hill, and we have a agency that makes appointments for us, and we meet with all of our legislators. That's historically the way it happened until this year. And so this year, the same appointments are going to be made, but we're going to have everything virtually. So sometimes in the past, people have not registered because it does cost a significant amount to get to Washington. But this year, registration is just $40, and you have that opportunity to communicate with congressmen, senators, and or their staff members to let them know why EMS is important. Registration is on the NAEMT website, naemt.org, and it's on the very front page on the rolling screen. You can click the button and get registered.
And so we've talked a lot about that contact, either by phone, email, using the online legislative service, but this is completely different. This is getting the opportunity to sit down face-to-face. Now, this year is going to be virtually. But this year, it's sitting down face to face with those legislators and being able to show what those emails and phone calls won't do. It's that body language. It's that passion. That's that feel for what you're trying to pass on from this profession to that individual. And really, you kind of have a captive audience. It's not like, hey, I got to vote. It's like, I got 15 minutes with you. Let's have some conversation. But this, it's time to basically get real. This is that one-on-one. You can see what they're feeling, but you're able to answer those questions. So it's great on an email. They can just say, hey, thanks. As Troy said, hey, we got your message. Great. This is the point where you can see what objections they have, right?
Right. And we're going to have time to prepare before the meetings. So right now, I know there's about 10 people registered from Louisiana. So before we have those meetings, we'll have time to prepare with what the focused agenda items from NAEMT are, so that everyone who attends will be able to be well educated and well versed on those topics prior to our meetings.
And David, this is where you build those relationships. This is the key piece where you build those relationships. And it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen year one, but Troy and Susan and I have been there every year of EMS on the Hill as long as it's been going on. And I will tell you now, those senators and representatives, when they're in their home state, when they're in Coeur d'Alene at an event, they will point out and go, oh, hey, Chris, how's it going? And that does a lot for you locally, but it also, if you can, again, build that relationship so that you are their go-to person, it makes all the difference in the world. And those are the things that can happen with EMS on the Hill. And it's, to me, I miss the fact that we're not going to be in person this year, because I think it does show something when you go to Washington, D.C., you show up in your Class A uniform, you're in their office, and you're right, it's only 15 or 20 minutes with them, but that makes an impact to them, and they do remember that.
Well, and whether you're walking the Rayburn or the Hart Building, again, kind of seeing that collective of individuals and their Class A's, and seeing that pack of individuals, that in itself is impactful. So, Eric, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, what would you say to, let's say our EMS for our EMS profession is still young as a whole. We at least in Tennessee, I can speak for us. We don't have a lot of people who stay in the field. So a lot of the advocates you're going to have are not, you know, 10 to 20 year members of EMS. They're 3 to 5 year members of EMS. What advice would you give them if they're on the fence of like, I don't know, that seems to be pretty intimidating to go from paramedic school, being a junior medic or a junior EMT, to all of a sudden talking to a representative about my industry?
Well, I would say that they got to, I mean, so if you're going to, if you are going to do that at 3 or 5 years, you just have to be educated about what you're going to say. So you can't just go in and tell war stories, or, I mean, don't get anecdotal, have facts. So I get a great example is recently, you know, one of the big things that we've dealt with over the last few years has been the drug shortage. And to deal with that in Congress, that's something they understand. When you can say, when a paramedic can say, or an EMT, an AEMT can stand in a congressman's office or a senator's office and say, I don't have epinephrine to give to a cardiac arrest patient, that's impactful. Now, if you say, like I said, you can't make it anecdotal and they want facts and figures, but that's exactly why I think it's important for those people to be engaged and involved. The other thing I would say is in that 3 to 5 year window, you're trying to decide whether you're going to make this a short-term thing or a long-term thing. And now you heard of all of us talk about how many years we've been doing this. So obviously we got past that 3 to 5 year bubble, but being able to, you know, if you can advocate and figure out that you don't necessarily want to be a line paramedic forever, but you want to advance, having some of these relationships, having some of the knowledge that it takes to prepare to advocate is only going to help you be a better employee, be a better paramedic, be a better AEMT, be an EMT, be a better EMT, be a better partner, all of those things.
And some of the stuff is the, sorry, Troy, go ahead.
Well, the thing I would add there too is, I think that's one of the big strengths that an EMT brings, right? Is 10, 12 years ago, I didn't know anything about any EMT. I'd been a medic for 20 years and et cetera, et cetera. I knew it was around, but I didn't know what it was about. And then I got started, and it gives you a platform to learn, and they help you understand what's important and how to go about it. And they educate you by being involved. You know, I'm excited this year. We've got over 215 people already registered from 43 different states. That's the best we've ever done. So that's really good, which means we're starting to move the needle a little bit, and the word is getting out there. But you can't be, an EMT allows you through the OLS and through advocacy coordination and the coordinator meetings and the committees and stuff to kind of learn what's going on, what's important, not only at the state, but at the federal level where we're working. And it gives you a little more confidence. And then you're around other people that are thinking the same way that you could learn from. And you kind of go in together as a team. And it's just a really easy way to get involved and to learn.
So one of the things that I was going to make mention here is, you know, there's a lot of times when we get into that, as Eric mentioned, that kind of the 3 to 5 year bubble, there's a lot of things that are going through people's heads about the professions, like, hey, we'd love to see this, we'd love to see that, we'd love to see this, we'd love to see that. And one of the next things that we're getting ready to talk about is some of the things that are going to be discussed for on EMS down the hill. And I guarantee you there's at least two of them on here that are probably said by just about every paramedic that's out there at some point in their career. We wish we could do this, we could do that, and we want to make sure that EMS actually counts.
Agreed.
So let's go there.
Okay.
Chairman Troy, let's talk about legislation for this year's EMS Day on the Hill. What are some of our top things? And let's kind of boil that down and see which ones are actually being talked about out there right now.
Okay. So we've got four, as Chris and Susan have mentioned before. We have a limited time in front of the representatives when we're on EMS on the Hill. So we have to have a short, concise message and specific asks for them. And so the last year we've been working on that. We have full-time staff and lobbyists up on the Hill that work every day with our partners, the AAA, you know, American Ambulance Association, and IAFC and IAFF. Because we have more in common than we have different And so again, we're kind of pulling that all together. But the four that we've recommended and was approved by the board was first TIP, which was treatment in place. That was part of the $1.9 billion relief package, which allows EMS providers to bill for patients they see that have COVID that they do not transport to the hospital. Now, that's already been signed into law. President Biden signed that into law last week. And so that's going to be more of a review and a thank you and keep up the good work kind of thing. Siren is another one. That is money for recruitment, retention, and education of volunteer workforce all across the country. That was signed into law a couple of years ago. We got $5.5 million budgeted for that. And those appropriations and things are already done. And the applications for that money this year were due by March 18th. But we've also added on to that because that's not near enough. So we've asked and are advocating to increase that number from 5.5 to 20 million. Dollars over the next year. So we have to spend that 5.5 first, but we're advocating that we increase that number to 20 million. So it's important that you, that everyone understands that and what it's for. In Nevada, that's a really close one for us. Most of our EMS providers are volunteer. Most of them are in the rural and in the frontier environments. There's not a lot of help in between. And so it's a really big thing for them, as it is in many states. The next one, we're expecting the bill to be dropped pretty soon, is the EMS Counts Act, trying to get an accurate count of the EMS workforce. How many basic EMTs, how many advanced EMTs, how many critical care paramedics, how many paramedics do we actually have in the public and the private sector? So we can start trying to figure out what we need to do with that information and what we need to do to help everyone there. And then the last one is, let me think, EMS Counts, the Siren update, and then Medicare extenders. That's something that's been around for 5 or 6 years, 7 years now, probably. It gives a little bit more money back from Medicare when we bill them. If you're in the rural frontier environments, you get a little bit more reimbursement that way. And so they'll be voting on that. Both of those last ones, the EMS Counts and the Medicare extenders, are due to be dropped in as a bill anytime. I just checked today with a lobbyist and some of our full-time staff, and that hasn't been dropped as of Friday. So hopefully this week, both of those bills will be introduced and we'll be able to have a good discussion with our electeds here in a month or so. So that's really the four main asks that we have this year.
So let's go ahead and break that down. I don't know that there's not a paramedic or just an EMS professional in general that has not uttered the words, "I wish I could just treat this patient and let them go back to their house." But they know that if they don't take them on to the hospital, they weren't going to get anything for that. So this is between ET3 and what we're seeing now with this treat in place legislation. It's getting to the point that our practitioners that are in this field are starting to be recognized for the healthcare work that they're actually doing, and know that, you know, there's opportunities that we have to treat those individuals, let them go back to their life without having to take it on the hospital, adding to the additional burden, adding to medical debt that they may incur. We treat, we let them go, and they have the opportunity to still bill for those services, right?
So, David, I think there's an important message here, and sometimes people joke about never let a good disaster go to waste. And I think while we're all tired of the pandemic, we were at it for over, I think we're at 54 weeks now of the pandemic, or maybe this is week 55 getting ready to come up. I don't know, but you know, the one thing that this has taught us is really, and has shown the legislators and has shown your local communities, is the importance of EMS and the role that we play in the healthcare community. no matter whether you're providing it from a fire-based system, a third service type system, a hospital system, a private system, what nonprofit, whatever mechanism your community uses to deliver EMS, we have proven very well over the course of the last year that we have absolutely, we're a valuable member of public safety and of healthcare. So that said, I think this is the first step. As Troy said, treat in place does not necessarily get us to the point we want to be, and it's not the end goal, but treat in place is a great starting point to get to the point where it's not just COVID or COVID-like symptoms, with it. We can get to the point where we're treating diabetics and getting reimbursed appropriately for treating them on scene and getting them shuffled to the right appropriate level of healthcare, which often isn't the emergency room, maybe not even urgent care. Maybe it's just finding them a path to get into their primary care physician and whatever. So I think with any bill, it's people get frustrated sometimes in legislative efforts that, man, well, why didn't you go for everything? Well, you have to take small bites out of the elephant. You can't eat the whole elephant all at once. And this piece of legislation is a perfect example of that. Is this gets us the starting point. This gets them to understand what we're doing, that we're not just ambulance drivers, we're not just a ride to the hospital, but we're clinical professionals providing health care that takes care of our community. And again, just we've proven ourselves very valuable over the last year. Let's not let that go to waste.
And that's one of those, as Troy mentioned, that's passed as far as the treat in place. And this is a great time, as Chris has mentioned earlier, build those relationships and say, hey, I noticed Representative XYZ, you voted for this, and I want to completely thank you because this is absolute recognition and it's going to provide a lot of good resources, and kind of builds that that fundamental knowledge of what the profession, but also gives them appreciation for what they've done.
Absolutely.
So, sure. So Susan, let's go into the next part, especially being in your position as your full-time job. Recruitment and retention is a huge area in Louisiana, especially. You have some of those large areas. You got New Orleans and many different areas, but you also have a lot of rural areas there as well. So we always talk about recruitment, the profession needing more individuals, but the Siren Act is focus not only on getting them in, but also keeping them in the profession. We've already kind of talked about that 3 to 5 years. Why is that retention component such a big component of the Siren Act?
Well, it's real important, you know, when we get people in and you know, I just read a post by a fellow EMS professional today where he started 50 years ago in high school. And he said, you know, they said, well, this is, you know, a good place to start, but it's not a career. But as you can see here today, I think most of us have made a career out of it. And so we want to make sure that we can do that. And this Siren money will help us do that. It helps with education. It helps with equipment. And, you know, especially in the rural areas, in the frontier areas. And Louisiana has a lot of rural areas. You know, we're known for New Orleans and Baton Rouge and Shreveport, but you know, we have a lot of rural areas where we need to keep the practitioners in those areas and working in the areas. And so the Siren money will provide the education and the equipment for these volunteer small services to stay in business and to keep the people educated and be able to give the treatment to the patients that are needed and, you know, make a career out of EMS.
I'm going to toss EMS counts as the very last one because I think I have an analogy that a lot of people will understand. So, Troy, I'll kick over to you real quick on the Medicare extenders itself. And, you know, we talk specifically about, you know, Medicare reimbursement kind of when it comes to insurers, that's where everybody kind of hit. But looking at pushing beyond just that ALS, and if you want to go back to one of our previous episodes, if you're listening, talking to Jason about documentation, he gets into the ALS 1, 2, et cetera. These kind of expand those funds that are available to EMS. So if you would go just a little bit deeper into that EMS extender program.
Okay, so basically these have been voted on and added into the budget over the last several years. It actually expires the end of 2022, and it gives an extra 2%, 3% super rural bonus increases for Medicare. There's another provision in that bill now that we're trying to get through after 2022, that on certain zip codes, they get an additional 50% increase for the first 17 miles of their transport. So there's a potentially large amount of reimbursement that can go for that. And it's really going to help the reimbursement. I mean, that's really important in the rural areas, because the rural areas actually fund and pay the bill stations open based on their ability to recoup and to bill for their services, right? So anything we can do to increase that helps them to become more stable and helps them to be there when they're needed. So I'm fairly comfortable that this will happen, but that's really the impetus of this whole bill, is to make sure and try to shore up that billing process, especially for rural, super rural, and frontier areas, because they do depend on that reimbursement to stay open and keep the lights on and the ambulances coming. So,
and one of the things we know, and I know that one of our federal legislators here in Tennessee has kind of been pushing on this as well, that in a lot of those rural areas, they've been hit by hospital closures, that they've ended up having to transport a lot further. And so they have more invested in each. So definitely something that they need to make sure to keep operational. So EMS counts, as you mentioned, really just gets into counting the number of people that are out there. And so a lot of people will ask, well, why does that really matter? And so the analogy that kind of come to my head is, you know, here in the United States, every 10 years we do a count. And it has a dramatic effect on everything that we have, from the number of representatives a specific state has. So there's a lot of things that happen. And as EMS counts, getting into that specific information could have an impact just on what resources and allocation that EMS gets later in the future. Is that a correct analogy there in the way I'm thinking?
Yeah,
well, I think. Oh, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so something that law enforcement and the fire service do really well is represent themselves. And EMS sometimes is our own worst enemy. And so you can go to any state and they can tell you how many firefighters there are and how many of them are volunteers and how many are paid. Same thing. Well, and there are no such thing as volunteer cops. So but they can tell you exactly how many certified law enforcement officers there are and how many people are on a roster at a sheriff's department or the highway patrol or the state police or the local PD, whatever. And when it comes, there are so many variations of how EMS is done. I said that a little earlier. You know, you have third service, fire based, hospital based, private, for profit, private, nonprofit. You have first response only agencies that aren't necessarily transporting. So if you just go off somebody's transport license and count people that way, there are a lot of people that are providing pre-hospital care that aren't on a transport service because they do it in a first response mechanism. And so I think we're short-sighted to think that the only way you provide EMS is in the back of an ambulance. And I think that we are shorting ourselves as a profession by not counting everybody that has the potential to touch a patient.
Do you have anything to add to that, Troy?
Well, the other thing that I would say is, in my last couple of years as EMS chief, there's less people that are actually applying for new positions, right, in EMS and those kinds of things. And so I think one of the other important aspects of that is to get a good count on all the levels of EMS providers, figure out how long they've been in the system, why they're leaving the system to do other things. All of that information helps us as a national organization and helps us to figure out with our partners things that we can do to shore up all of that. It's just getting harder and harder to find people that want to stay in EMS. And so if we don't know how many we have as a very baseline foundational thing, then we're just kind of spinning our wheels.
Now, Susan, if I was to ask this question, I guarantee you I already know the answer. But as the people in Louisiana go, if I was to say I was a member of the Louisiana EMS profession, I say it's absolutely too late for me to get started. Is that a correct statement?
No, it's never too late. It's never too late. So, you know, I do this presentation and I'm just going to use this as an example because I waited till I was 50 years old to go to grad school. And one thing that was not on that application was how old are you? And if you're over 50, you can't get in, right? So that's the same thing with EMS. There's no age limit to get in. And we want, you know, we want everyone who's interested to get in. And I'm, you know, I have my daughter who y'all saw a little bit earlier, you know, she's deciding what to do. And I said, well, you know, I made a career out of EMS. You might want to really think about that. And she says, well, I'm already 25. I might be too old. No, you might not be too old. You're never too old. So, you know, we want people, whoever's interested in taking care of patients and to promote our profession is the people we want.
All right. And I'm going to let us transition away from this conversation with just a plug. So whichever or combination of all three of the three of you, why should we get involved with the National Association of EMTs?
I would say that the NAMT is the ability for all EMS providers to belong to a big organization that has the know-how and the relationships and partnerships to make sure that your voice gets heard. It gives you a place to send your issues, difficulties, good things that are happening up the chain so that we know what's going on and we know how to best represent you and to help you in your particular situation. There is a lot of power in numbers and in unity. And so when you're belonging to a group and you feel like you belong to the group, like I have with NAMT for the last several years, I've seen great things happen, things that I didn't think that would ever happen in my career are happening now. And so that would be my plug is it doesn't cost a lot to become a member and to stay a member. It unites you with over 70 or 80,000 people across the country. And a lot of people don't know this. There's people all over the world that belong to NAMT in Europe and South America, all over the place. We've got friends all over the place that we've met that have the same passion as we do, but they're living in different parts of the world. And it's fun to have friends in Chile or in Norway or somewhere in the Eastern Bloc. So it's a great, great organization. It's very well organized and it allows for great work to be kind of centralized and move forward as one.
You know, and I would say the NAEMT membership has a great membership benefits package. You know, membership is $40 a year, but if you have to buy your own uniforms, if you enjoy going on vacation, if you enjoy going to the movies, if you need continuing ed, all of those discounts will easily make up for that $40 a year. If you go on membership benefits, you'll see that it's well worth just being a member for those benefits alone.
And I will, I'll make mine very succinct. We complain all the time that we're not seen as a profession, and this is a professional organization. And we are advocating for the EMS profession constantly. And the second you become a member, you're included in that.
I would agree.
All right. Well, we certainly want to thank Susan and Troy and Chris for joining us this evening. I think we had a tremendous understanding now of advocacy. Throw out one more pitch as you listen to this. Make sure and get involved. You can still go to the National Association of EMTs website and see how you can get involved for this year's virtual EMS Day on the Hill. Just go to their website and find out more information, as they mentioned earlier. So to the three of you, we certainly thank you for joining us this evening. It's been a great talk. And we're going to conclude this evening. And we always like to say that we look forward to recording these episodes and engaging with each one of you. So make sure that we get your feedback, because that's how we figure out exactly how or what you want to hear or who you want to hear. on all of our episodes. So make sure to go to Gems at Apple, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, but make sure you can also find us on our website at emshandoff.com. You can also find us on our active Facebook group and Instagram under the same title as well. And so for my co-host, Bradley Dean and Eric McCullough, this is David. Take care, stay safe, and always remember the value of your EMS handoff.